I'm so happy to be able to talk to this man again. For nearly 40 years, he entertained people across the country as the lead singer for the Statler Brothers, including multiple times at the Duke Wayne State Fair and once at the SIU Arena. He is a member of the most awarded act in the history of country music. He's the author of a new book, and as far as I can tell, he's a pretty nice guy, too. Don Reed is on the other end of the phone line. Hi, Don.
How you doing, Robert? And thank you for those words. I try to be a nice guy above all else, and I appreciate it.
In all those years of doing interviews, do you ever wish the interviewer would just kind of cut to the chase with all those introductions?
Oh, no, I like those introductions. It makes me feel good. I'm thinking sometimes, who's he talking about? But, it's quite nice.
You know, before we get started, I said you've done thousands of these interviews like this probably. What is the one question that you're just sick and tired of answering?
Oh, my golly. I don't know. Just people, I've got to say this. Most people are very original with their questions, and they are very straightforward with it, and I like that. Now, when somebody asks me something that I haven't been asked, that I'll always enjoy. But, probably the one through the years, where did you all get your name? But I can understand why people would mostly want to know that. But that's probably been the most asked one, where we got our name and why we called ourselves Statler and we weren't all really all brothers and all that. But that's interesting to folks, so I don't mind answering it, really.
Well, to borrow from Jerry Clower, let me just scratch that off my list.
No, if it's on there, it came from a box of Statler tissues.
Yeah.
And that's why, if you've probably never heard of them, they were a Northeast product, and we saw them one day we were rehearsing in a room, and we said, hey, that's a nice name. We'll call ourselves Statler.
Yeah, I went to the Country Music Hall of Fame a few years ago, and they have that box of Statler tissues there, right there with your exhibit.
Yeah, they did. That's where it all came from.
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, Don has written a new book. It's called The Music of the Statler Brothers, an anthology. And boy, it is. Fans of yours are, of course, going to like this book, but not to sound too cliche, it really has something for just about everybody. You tell stories from Johnny Cash to John Wayne and just about everybody in between. And the reader, we really get to take a shotgun seat through some incredible entertainment history there.
Well, that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to tell the stories behind the curtain, the stories behind the songs. And that's what it's about, is the music. So I'm basically telling where we got our songs, how we wrote them, why we wrote them, the songs that we chose that we didn't write, why we did those, down into to actually how some of them were arranged. And I learned this through all those years of people asking about those sort of things, and I thought, well, maybe they're interested in that. And I gave it a shot, and I had a wonderful time writing it. It was I was able to go back and have great memories just sitting here in my office by myself.
So for the first 8.5 years of your career, the Statler Brothers, they kind of played second fiddle to Johnny Cash opening up his shows. So Do you remember that first concert where the Statlers were the real star and what that felt like?
Yes, I do. It felt like a great responsibility, because all of a sudden we realized when we were working for John all those years, and we go out and see the crowds, and we realized that he was the main draw, of course, and this was wonderful to watch all of this. Then all of a sudden, when we went out on our own and we're standing, when you're peeping through the curtain, you're thinking, now it's up to us tonight. This is on us. And you learn to take on that responsibility. You learn to be even more appreciative of what accolades may come from the audience, of what that response was from the audience each night, and the numbers. And all of a sudden, it's like growing up. It's like going from high school to college.
Thinking back to those early days and that first big paycheck, did you buy anything special with that money?
No, Robert, none of us were ever extravagant. I always enjoyed saving money more than I did spend it. Does that sound horrible?
No,
but
I'm the same way.
That's how I was raised. And I enjoy, someone once said, never spend the principal, live on the interest. And I'm kind of that kind of guy. And I've been very, very blessed and so thankful and grateful. But never went out and bought a new car and something like that. But nothing anything more extravagant than that.
Since the very early days, country music and the stars that sing it, they've been known, whether it's true or warranted or not, for kind of their drinking, their fighting, their cheating, and sometimes just the most low-down behavior out there. Now, the Statler Brothers, that was never your guys' M.O. or your calling card, And with all that going on around you, did you guys ever feel like sort of outsiders?
Sometimes, exactly, because there was a lot. There's a lot of that in the industry. Any entertainment branch of the business, you're going to find that. And sometimes we were the odd man out. We were the ugly duckling because we were different. But we learned to live with that. That's how we were raised. That's how we grew up, and that's how our belief system was. And we just we weren't involved in the drugs. We weren't involved in the drinking. And we didn't do those kind of songs. I think I even mentioned that in the book. Now, that's not saying anything against anybody else that does. They want to do that. That's their choice. But that's kind of who we were. Our image, we didn't have to worry so much about our image because we were kind of who we were anyway. I've said many times we were an extension of our image on stage and in public was an extension of who we were privately.
You know, we're talking with Don Reed. He has a new book out called The Music of the Statler Brothers, an anthology. And multiple times throughout this book, you suggest for the reader to go find a song or television clip online. And most of that is online on YouTube, but the fans have transferred it from like old vinyl records or even VHS tapes.
Yeah.
You're an artist, but you're also a businessman. You're not getting a lot of cash for that. How does that sit with you?
I realize that there's things to be done, yet still technology-wise as far as payments for publishers and songwriters and artists and that sort of thing. But, it's nothing I'm going to sit here and complain about. Like, as I say, we've been so blessed with so many ways and financially being one of them. I certainly can't sit here and complain about that. I'm just glad people are able to hear and get the product that they still want and certainly appreciative that they still want it.
Now, most of your stuff has been released digitally, but there are a couple albums that haven't. Do you have any idea of when those would be released, if they would be?
I don't, and I trust that is going to happen one of these days. I don't know. I understand that this book has caused the powers that be to look at that closely and maybe bring out some that haven't been put out before. That's really out of our hands. You know, the record companies have ownership of those masters and those marketing tools. So it's only something that we can suggest, but we really don't have that responsibility and can't do that.
Now, through your songs and your books, it's really no secret that you and your brothers are a big fan of the movies, especially that golden age of Hollywood. So what do you think about the movies now? Do you have any favorites, say, the last 10 years?
Oh, my golly. I'm sure there's things I like. You know, I went to see a movie just before all of this COVID started and the theaters got closed. I went to see a movie, a new mystery called Knives Out. It was almost an old English kind of mystery, and I love those old things. So I love that. It was a new movie back the first year or December or whenever it was. So I like that kind of stuff, and I like but I don't really see anything out there that appeals to me. I'm not at all of the animated things and all of the everything's explosions and robots. I don't really care for that. I like a little more human relationships, and it's hard to find that in theaters today.
Do you remember the first time that you heard yourself on an oldie station and what that felt like?
That ear, the beginning of the end, is that what you mean?
Well, whatever, however you take it.
No, I didn't feel that way. As a matter of fact, I felt honored because all of a sudden, I was here. We are among the greats, and I'm saying, "Whoa, this is pretty nice." And they're playing there because you know you realize that's going to happen, and I'm certainly honored to be there now because I'm not. I hate to say this. I'm not a big fan of the country music sound today because I don't understand it. It has left me, or I have separated myself from that, but it's different. We know what we mean when we say it's very different from what it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s when the Statlers were there selling albums. And I don't begrudge anybody that. Every generation should have their own ideas and their own sound, but I'm certainly honored to be one of the golden oldies.
So do you think that songwriting is more of a young man's sport, meaning that maybe younger people have more emotions, maybe they're feeling them for the first time?
I think so, because you want to write about it, there's something new to you, so you want to write them. Plus, you have that energy that comes with youth. And to sit down sometimes and write a song after your prime, say, you wind up repeating yourself. I remember one time Paul Newman said about his acting, he said, I don't do a lot of movies now because I feel like I'm repeating myself. I've already done that, some technique that he did or type of scene. And I know exactly what he was talking about. You know, if you don't have anything new and fresh to do, sometimes it's better just to back off. And I think that comes with age or with maturity, however you want to call it. But the energies are there for the young people, yes.
Now, one of the first songs that the Statler Brothers recorded and released was The Ballad of Billy Christian, which was written by Tom T. Hall. And you tell the story in your book how Billy Christian was intended to be the single, Flowers on the Wall, the B-side, the disc jockeys kind of flip-flopped them, and a career was born. Now, that's at the beginning of your career. Fast forward all those years later towards the end, and you're going into the Country Music Hall of Fame, and who else is in that induction class but Tom T. Hall? Now, did that have any more special impact for you guys?
Oh, man, it made you real. Let me just say this. There are no such thing as coincidences. When you believe in God, there's no such thing as a coincidence. Well, what a great beginning and ending to those careers. That's how it happened. And that's exactly as you told it there, and I tell it in the book. It was we went in the same night during the same ceremony, and we were on the same record label together for, I don't know, probably 30 years or something at Mercury. Had the same producer, Jerry Kennedy. It's just a very odd. It was kind of meant to be.
Now, we're lucky enough to be talking to Don Reed, a member of the Statler Brothers for many years and the author of a new book on the history of each and every song they recorded. You write in the book that your career sort of had four different stages. What were they, and what separates them in your mind?
Well, let me see. I think of it as the Cash years. That's how we got into business with Johnny Cash. And we were there for 8.5 years. And then we got into, we also had the Columbia years when we were Columbia Records for 5 years. And I talk about that. I was very honest about that in the book, about our unhappiness there and how we struggled. Then the Mercury years, when we found Jerry Kennedy, who was our savior and gave us total freedom. And then our television years, who came in the 90s, when we had a hit number one television show on TNN for 7 years, on variety show on Saturday night. And we became more of a television act than a record act at the time. But all of those phases, I enjoyed every one of them immensely. I learned from them immensely, as we all did. And all of that together made us who we were, whoever we were.
In this book, you talk both about writing and then performing songs. For you, which one was the more rewarding, crafting that perfect lyric or getting that performance just right in front of a crowd?
Pretty equal, Robert, to be honest, but if one had the edge over the other, I probably think of myself more as a writer than I do a singer. But just a little bit more, and there's probably a little bit more satisfaction in the song. I probably would put more, I would say give writing the edge on that.
Now, your career has intersected and intertwined with so many other people. Could I give you just a few names, and you give me a short story or memory or whatever pops into your head about
I'll
that person?
I'll do my best, yeah.
All right, start with the biggies here. President Reagan.
President Reagan, oh, what a gentleman he was. And we were with him a number of times, on 3 or 4 different occasions. And he was just so gracious. He was so down to earth. He was so straightforward. Actually, you know, we would sit down and talk with him. He was just a wonderful man and such dignity and power. I loved him.
You write in your first book, or Random Memories, about a Christmas gift kind of mix-up, and that was just, you'll have to read the book, but I always loved that story.
Yeah, the where we sent out little, what were they, little pocket knives or little, some kind of little promotional things to PR, our PR department sent it out to DJs and newspaper guys, and his name got on the list and wound up sending the president one of those little promotional things, and then we got a letter back from him thanking us for it. And then we were so embarrassed that how did the president's name get on that trinket list? But he was so gracious and to write us a thank you note.
Yeah. How about Dolly Parton?
Dolly Parton, what a talent, what a voice. And this girl, it'd be a great question if you get a chance to ask her sometime, what as a writer or performer, because I got a feeling she might say the same thing, that the writing is so important to her. I tell you, there's not a lot of ladies, a lot of women in the industry on either any branch that has written as many songs and as good of songs as she has.
How about Waylon Jennings?
Waylon. We go back, way back with Waylon from the early days, and I loved him, loved his voice. This is back when Waylon was a suit and tie act. He and Willie both were back in the 60s. And I loved his singing then, his songwriting. We used to sit around all night and sing each other's songs. And I got a lot of respect for what he did with his career because he created new and interesting things. He was good. He was good.
How about Jackie Gleason?
Jackie Gleason. Which, of course, we did Smokin' and Bandit 2 with him. A very solemn guy, as I found through the years, that many comedians off stage are very serious kind of people. And they hit a switch somewhere when the camera comes on, and they do their funny bit. And he was that way, too, very serious. And I've seen him in movies where he's been done serious roles, and that's more him than when you see him, you know, To the Moon, Alice, and all that stuff.
How about George Jones?
George Jones?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, George Jones.
But maybe the greatest country voice there is. His song, I told him, was able to tell him that. I talk about that in the book. It was what interested me in country music when I was about, you know, a teenager. He got me interested. He got my attention. And yeah, I think it was just a terrific time. Our sons, Wilson Fairchild, Harold's son and my son, they were the opening act for George about the last 3 years of his career. They were there when he passed away, and they were at his funeral and all of that. And you just got to love a man that was as creative and such a stalwart in the business.
Let's talk about you some more. You're part of the most awarded act in the history of country music. You're a member of multiple Halls of Fame. You've had proclamations, celebrations in your honor. If you have to give them all back but one, which one would it be? Which one means the most?
You know, strangely enough, Robert, I can answer that easily because I remember how shocked and how weak I was to where I had to sit down the night I got the phone call that you all have just been voted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. That had never crossed my mind, I got to be honest. It's just one of those things. I thought Hall of Fame, I would think, you know, Tex Ritter and Eddie Arnold and Johnny Cash, and I just never thought about that. And when I got that call, that was the one that hit me the hardest, and I'm probably the one I'm proudest of.
Now, so many musical acts retire only to return to performing later. Now, why did you guys decide to retire and then stay retired?
When we decided to retire, we were just getting the travel, that's a young man's game. You were talking about writing a while ago. Traveling is a young man's game. We'd been at this thing for 40 years, and getting off the bus and getting in the hotel rooms and all that was where the energy was spent. We loved the time on stage. We could just done that all the time if we had just been woof and transported to the stage from one stage to the next. But it was everything together, and we said, it's time for us to go and do this. And I made that stipulation, too. I always hated comeback tours and comeback performances. And I said, if we go, we're going to stay, because I know I'll never do another comeback. I think that's so self-serving, and I just wouldn't do that. So when we left for good, and glad we did, because we had some wonderful, restful, peaceful, and nice years.
Now, you have been retired for nearly 20 years, and even today, your book, The Music of the Statler Brothers, an anthology, is the Amazon bestseller in the gospel music category. Now, it's not really gospel, but I think that the bestseller status is just a testament to your longevity. You know, what's that secret of such a long run of success?
What is the secret? First off, being honest to yourself, being true to yourself, as corny as that sounds, and also keeping your ear open to the fans, because we were always realized how important our fan base was to our career. And we was never kept them at arm's length. We never said, no, we're not hearing you. We heard what they wanted, and we saw what they wanted, and we gave it. And we didn't try to force feed something new and different to them. We gave them what they wanted, and they gave us in return what we needed.
And throughout your career, you were always patriotic, but never political. How do you think that would go over today? Do you think people would want you to take sides? Do you think they'd reject it altogether? What are your thoughts about that?
I think they want us to take sides. I think the whole atmosphere is different today, because you can be patriotic without being political, or you know, let me say you could. I'm not sure you can do that today, because everybody has turned patriotism even into some sort of brand of politics. And I think that is horrible. Everybody should be able to wave and salute the same flag and wave and salute the same principles of good. And that's where we were, and we never went partisan at all, never would and still wouldn't.
Now, you have so many good stories in this book. And before I let you go, I wonder if you could, I could ask you to tell you my favorite. It's the story of the time before the internet, that story behind your version of Hello, Mary Lou, and how it all came together on a tour bus one night.
We were sitting around on our bus traveling somewhere through the United States, and we got had a guitar, and we were playing around, got singing old songs, and we were singing Hello, Mary Lou. And we couldn't remember all the words. So we had our bus driver call our band bus that was behind us and said, any of you guys know the lyrics? And they said, yeah, we're going to pull over to the truck stop here in a minute. We'll write them down for you. And they did. And we took it, and we worked up an arrangement, and we recorded it, and we had a great hit with it. Many, many years later, we started noticing, or I think it was people that started telling us, you got the word, the lyrics are wrong. Y'all were singing the wrong lyrics in that song a couple of different places. And we said, what are you talking about? And it turns out, I'd have to get the book to show you exactly what I'm talking about. It turns out we were singing the wrong lyrics, because we just took what our band members had given us and never bothered to check them out. And it didn't hurt the song at all. And we didn't hear from Gene Pitney, and nobody complained, so everything was well. But it's funny what, after all those years, you find out you've been doing it wrong.
I was very sad to hear the passing of your brother Harold earlier this year, and yep. I never met the guy, of course, but somehow I felt like I'd lost a friend. And I think that's the mark of a great entertainer and a great human, making millions of people feel like they have a special connection with him, and your brother certainly was that.
You know, Robert, I appreciate you saying that, and I have heard from so many, many thousands of messages and emails and phone calls and letters and everything from people all over the world, and that's what they were saying to me. I feel like I've lost a friend. I feel like I've lost a family member, and I'm just really grieving over Harold. And he was just a genuine guy, and he was funny naturally. He was funny on stage. He didn't follow a script half the time, and he was out there relating with the people, and they loved him for that. Little kids liked him. Adults liked him. They all got something different from his humor. And not only being a great songwriter, bass singer, like I say, he was very funny, and it was natural, and Lord knows, yes, and I miss him more every day.
So Don Reed, the author of the new book, The Music of the Statler Brothers, an anthology, what's the best way for people to order the book, Don?
Well, you can get it anywhere. Like I say, anywhere you buy any other book, you can get it on Amazon or any of the bookstores on the site. But also you can order it at statlerbrothers.com. And when you do that, it's autographed. I autograph everything that comes through statlerbrothers.com.
And he does. I've got one sitting at home on my coffee table.
Steve, you can attest to that.
I can. Guaranteed. Don, I can't tell you how much I appreciate talking to you today. Many more continued years of success, sir.
Thank you, Robert. It's always a pleasure talking to you. As you say, we did this together, I think, about a year ago, and I always enjoy talking to you. Thank you for your originality, and I appreciate it.